Greetings and welcome to The Thirsty Mage, the podcast that refuses to acknowledge that the Nintendo Switch has a touchscreen. I'm your host for this episode, someone under no circumstances will be touching my screen with my finger or a stylus, David Loy. And the reason I'm bringing this up is because we're talking about games that were designed for the DS and the 3DS that are now being ported to the Switch. Joining me fresh from playing the Etrurian Odyssey trilogy on Switch and here to drop some of his opinions on said game, it's Jordan Rudick.
Yeah, very fresh, as in, like, when we're recording this on Wednesday, our reviews are literally dropping in 5 minutes, at least for the first game they're dropping. So, and then we'll have 2 and 3 the next day. So when you're listening to this, everybody, you will be able to check out our full reviews on NWR for Etrian Odyssey 1, 2, and 3, which are part of the Etrian Odyssey Origins Collection. Those are the first three games in the series that have all been kind of remastered in HD and then sold together, or you can buy them separately as well. It's been nice kind of going back to I really like these games. I love the series. I've played almost all of the games, not necessarily finished them all, because these are really long dungeon crawling RPGs that have generally a very high difficulty curve and require a lot of grinding, a lot of strategizing. But I do thoroughly enjoy them, and I'm excited to talk about the trilogy that's been brought over to Switch now, especially the third one, which is the one that I ended up taking on for review.
Yeah, I know there's been some discussion about it in the Discord about this particular series coming to Switch, and it's also coming to Steam, and I'm assuming PlayStation as well, and. But the first thing that comes to mind for me is the incredible price. It's like, I don't know. It's almost, I know Breath of the Wild, Tears of the Kingdom is not like the first game that kind of broke that. In Canada, it's $79.99. In the US, I believe it's $59.99 barrier. But it just seems like the bubble has been burst, because yeah. We had like the Pixel Remaster. I don't exactly remember how much that was for Switch. I remember paying over $100 for it on Steam. And now I'm looking at the price, like, in Canadian, and with a 33% pre-purchase discount, it's still $107 Canadian.
Yeah. Like,
it's wild. And it's, they're $53 like each. So you get 1, 2, and 3 all HD remakes. But yeah, they're $53 American each. If you buy them separately, so
that's for the Etrian Odyssey games, David.
Yeah,
yeah. So at least the collection in Canadian is $105. It's almost like you're buying two, getting one free at that point, I guess.
Yeah, I guess it's the way to look at it.
I mean, that's such a steep discount for buying all three. You might as well, you know, if you like these games and you want to replay them, and you feel like you could go for all three, I would just say buy the collection, and then just be done with it. But it is a little bit steep, I think, being honest. I think thinking about these really are remasters rather than remakes. It's more of a fresh coat of paint, and obviously some finagling done to get them to play with button controls, and we're going to get into that later. But yeah, there isn't a lot of, I don't want to say extra effort, but these are, if you've played them before, the original versions on DS, like they look and feel very similar to that. You know, there aren't major mechanical or gameplay changes added in these versions. There are some minor updates and adjustments maybe, but yeah, it's kind of what you see is what you get, I suppose. If you want that HD look, or you've never played them before and you just want a modern version, I think this works. So yeah, that price point is something that's going to be hard to get over, I think. But I think we're going to see more of this. We've seen a lot of collections of games that have been priced really low. I'm thinking specifically about the Konami collections that came out, the Castlevania one, the Contra one. Those were really good, and you got like 6 to 8 games for under $20, you know. And yes, they weren't remakes or remasters, but still, those games still play very well today, and they had like save states and stuff like that to make them more playable. They did add some extra things to those original games, but there isn't enough work here really to help justify that cost. I think you really do have to like these games. It is surprising to see how much they're charging for the individuals.
Well, it's like Collection of Mana came out a couple years ago, and I don't even think it was full price, and you got
it wasn't. No, it was
three games out of that.
$39.99, I want to say, was maybe the Canadian price, or $49, but it wasn't full retail for sure.
Yeah, it was almost like half retail, and you were getting I would call them remastered versions. Like they were upscaled for the Switch, at least, you know.
I mean, we'd never had Trials of Mana at any point.
Oh yeah, new game in
the West, right? So yeah, totally new game. And then you had the Trials of Mana remake, which was also not full price, right? That was a full remake, full, you know, in every sense of the word.
Yeah.
So it is funny, you know, we keep kind of having these discussions. The topic keeps coming up of the value of a remake, the value of a remaster, and now really it's the value of a collection. You know, getting multiple games that have had some treatment done to them, like what is that worth? How much is that going to cost? If I think of these games as being geared towards fans mostly, and that's kind of what I'm thinking about, is I think they want fans of this series to buy these games. Atlas, right, that's published these ones, I believe, and developed them. They want to know if they can continue the Etrian Odyssey series without a dedicated touchscreen or without needing a dedicated touchscreen. I think they want to see how sales go with this one. And it's going to be a tougher task, a tougher ask with the inflated price. I do wish that the price was a little bit more reasonable on these, if I'm being honest. And I don't like to talk about pricing in reviews, but on a podcast, I'm happy to admit that I think these games are should be a little bit cheaper given what's gone into them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, the big question, I guess, is how this game plays, because this is one of the Atlas franchises that I'm probably the least familiar with. I have played I think it was Untold 2. I think there's two, right?
Yeah, there are two Untold games. The first one and the second one, it was the kind of their remake series, I guess, that stopped at the second game, actually.
Yeah, I don't know if I still have the second one or not. I definitely played it because I remember what I remember of it is it kind of felt like playing kind of a classic SMT with like the grid movement.
Yeah.
But then there was like the mechanic of you had the touch screen below where you're kind of filling in the map as you go. Mm-hmm. And I have no idea how they would make this. I remember seeing the trailer where they're like, oh, well, the map's on like the right hand of the screen and you know, you got your main view or whatever. But I have no idea how they've implemented this map drawing, and you're going to have to let me and everyone else know. How the hell does that work?
Yeah, for sure. Let's backtrack just slightly, just for those who have never played an Etrian Odyssey game and want to know what the heck are these games about. So Etrian Odyssey is a series of dungeon crawling RPGs where you basically get into a town, you create a party of five adventurers. You can choose their job classes. I think the third game has some really interesting job classes. I'll try to talk about that a bit later. But yeah, you choose your party of five, and they all have different skill trees, skills that you can unlock as you level up. You're going into this dungeon and you're kind of going from floor to floor, generally going down into the labyrinth, into kind of the depths of this multi-floor dungeon. Every five floors or so is referred to as a stratum. And so there are probably about five or six strata, maybe 25 to 35 floors in total in the dungeon. And so the story, every kind of stratum has its own kind of like story mission attached to it generally. There'll be a little bit of light storytelling, not a ton. The Untold games 1 and 2, the second one that you played, those had additional story beats added to them, and they had like a dedicated party of five that named characters, I believe, and a little bit more story added. And so that's what the remake on 3DS of the first game and then the second game in the Untold versions on 3DS, that it added a little bit more story. In these base versions and then the HD versions we have here on Switch, the story is still pretty bare bones. It's much more about just the challenge of grinding through the dungeon, kind of doing the mapping, right? So the mapping is a huge part of this series. As you approach each floor, the map on the right side of the screen, or on the DS, it was on the bottom screen, as you mentioned, David, it's completely bare. And so you're supposed to use a stylus to draw it in, or on Switch, you can use the touch screen. So you could use a stylus or use your finger to draw it in. There's also an auto map function that you can turn on or off. So if you leave that on, the walls of corridors and the walls of areas will be filled in as you go. And then you just need to fill in landmarks like doors, treasure chests, points of interest. You grab little icons from your touchscreen or using the button controls, which I'll mention in a second. You can point out mining spots where you can mine for resources. You can also indicate secret passages. And once you've activated a secret passage, it'll actually glow. It'll change color on your map, so you'll know that it's accessible from either the left side or the right side or whatever. So if you're not wanting to touch your screen of your Switch, or if you're playing
fingerprints on that Switch screen?
Exactly, you don't. Anyone with glasses or you know, a cell phone just hates smudges. Yeah, you definitely don't want to be touching your touch screens there. But if you're playing docked mode as well, so the way the button controls work are you're basically using the right stick of the controller to activate a menu at the top right corner. The menu has all the icons you want to use, such as the aforementioned the door, closed door, open door, the stairs going up, stairs going down, treasure chest open. Different mining areas, you could use like an exclamation point symbol for a point of interest or something you need to come back to later. There's arrows you can use to indicate secret passages that you want to use later, or to show you what direction the secret passages flow in, if they only flow in one direction. You're using a combination of the right stick, and then you use the ZL and ZR buttons to grab an icon and then place it on the map. And it might not sound overly complicated, but when it comes to grabbing the icon and bringing it down to the actual map, which is in the bottom right corner, and then placing the icon in the right place, or if you place it wrongly, trying to pick it up and move it, all of this is very cumbersome. It doesn't work very well. It doesn't feel good. I think if you maybe practice with it a bunch, you might become more comfortable with it. But, you know, across my playthrough of the third game, 20 plus hours, I don't know if it shows the time or if I can remember the time, but rolled credits nonetheless. And I used the button controls, a handful of times, and it still never felt very good. So I just resorted to using the touchscreen. And then in some of the later dungeons, I was kind of just trying to fly through them a little bit. So I didn't mark down everything in my map. My maps in the first half of the game were much more thorough. But yeah, I don't think the button controls are great here. I think they are a stopgap, kind of a half measure, maybe. I found myself just wanting to either grab a stylus or just touch my touchscreen as little as possible. But when I'm adding a few things, especially the doors and stairwells, I did want to indicate where those were, and the secret passages, obviously. But yeah, it's not great. It's not the best. Not the best.
Well, it's funny, these, you had because the DS and 3DS were around for so long, and you had these games that were specifically designed for it. I know, with game preservation, it's nice to have these updated versions for Switch, but just some of these games, it just doesn't seem like it makes sense to me to even, I guess it's, maybe worth the try. Like, the really hardcore people may, this is what they want, and maybe they'll put up with the differences. But, I actually own Neo, The World Ends With You, and I've been reluctant to play it because after playing The World Ends With You on DS, I'm just like, I can't even fathom how they've figured out how to do the combat system on a non dual screen, like not even a touch screen, just a non dual screen. Because in The World Ends With You, you had a character on the top screen and a character on the bottom screen. You had to use your left hand to control the character on the top screen, and then you're using your right hand with the stylus, and you're just literally drawing moves. Like, you have to draw circles, or you have to tap, or you're moving Nico around with the stylus. And I can't even compute how they would figure that out. There must be some weird thing where I think I read somewhere or heard something about like there's a lot of automation for the top character now or something. And it's like, well, what's the point then? Like,
yeah,
you know, and I feel like it almost does a disservice to like, cause if you've never played Etrian Odyssey and you're coming in, you could easily, like, I feel like you might be turned off by the cumbersome of it and not realize how good these games are on their original platforms.
I mean, we talk about games that use a console to the best of its ability, right? Or use it to its utmost capacity, right? Etrian Odyssey was one of those games for DS and then 3DS, right? It was the perfect, one of the perfect use cases of the dual screen consoles that Nintendo came up with. Having, you know, the action, like your turn-based battles, your exploration, your first person kind of perspective on the top screen, and then drawing the map on the bottom screen. It's fantastic. It's an excellent implementation. These games just had such a cozy, perfect fit on the DS and 3DS. And yeah, I think there ended up being five or six of them all in, and then two more with the Untold remakes on 3DS. So you have about eight Etrian Odyssey games across DS and 3DS. And then I get you want to try it, right? You want to try bringing them to a different platform. You want to try to get them a home on Switch, or you maybe just see what the player base thinks, right? I really do think this is a test, right? It's a test of whether they should make more of these games. Should they do a new one if there isn't a lot of love for an Etrian game on a non-dual screen console? And so we'll see, you know, we'll see if people are going to buy this game. You know, we gave it, Donald and I gave 1 and 3 7.5s. Neil gave the second game an 8. I think that might be right. I think the second game probably is the best of the three. Having played all of them to some extent or in some form, I think that's right. But yeah, it's, can we get over the map making, just being so good on the two screen handhelds and being kind of mediocre, and that being the map making being such a important part of the DNA of this franchise, right? Like it's what separates this game from other dungeon crawlers, right? I think Donald referred to the game Wizardry in his review, an NES game or a computer game, where you have the first person dungeon crawling, like that was kind of an original form of RPGs, and we've seen other games do dungeon crawling before, but none have made map making like this kind of really 1A, 1B kind of gameplay mechanic, right? It is such a fun, relaxing part of the game, right? Like you think about like kind of filling in like a Sudoku grid or playing Minesweeper or a crossword, you know, filling in a map is kind of like that. Like you want to get to 100% completion of your map. You want to mark everything, not just so you can come back to it later, but just so that when you look at your map, you're like, oh, I found everything here. Now I can move on to the next map. You know, it's like an adult coloring book or something, you know? Yeah, so that's definitely lost to some extent in this version, unless you do just grab a stylus and just draw on your Switch console with your makeshift stylus there. Yeah. It's tricky. It's tricky to get over the fact that something feels like it's missing here.
Well, what's funny is it seems like this is a generation late because it would have been perfect for Wii U.
Oh yeah, that's right. Exactly. It still had a built-in stylus for some reason, and the two screens, right?
And the two screens. Yeah, it would be perfect. Like you have your map on your gamepad, and you'd have your stylus right there.
Yeah.
And you know, it's like how Wind Waker just felt better playing because it's like, well, you had the menu system right in front of you, so you could flip through your inventory real quick.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. Even Xenoblade X was great on the Wii U, right? For second use of the screen, and Wii U did have a few games that made use of the two screen functionality quite well. But the thing was, the 3DS was still going strong during the Wii U era. So they just put Etrian Odyssey games on the 3DS instead, and it made a ton of sense, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So they remake 1 and 2 for 3DS. I think Etrian Odyssey 4, if I'm not mistaken, is the first mainline entry that comes, and then they've got Etrian Odyssey 5, and then I think the sixth game was Etrian Odyssey Nexus, which kind of borrowed parts of the previous games or brought dungeons from the previous games forward and kind of put them into this one massive labyrinth. So that was a pretty cool game. Again, I highly recommend this series. If you can get those games on DS or 3DS, play those for sure. And that's the way they're meant to be played. this Switch version is it's a good game because I think at the heart of the experience, it's still fun. If you like punishing, challenging RPGs where you have to grind, you get to customize your party, you have to think about what abilities they have and how the abilities synergize. All of that is very enjoyable here. Like the RPG-ness of these Etrian Odyssey games, right up there, you know, up there with the best of RPGs. But the other aspect is creating that map and the story. Those are lacking here, right? It's almost a shame that we didn't get these story editions of the Untold versions in this collection. And I guess it's because the third game never got an Untold remake on 3DS that they just wanted, they were just going to go back to the original three versions on DS. So I have mixed feelings about this game, even though I do like it and I enjoyed playing it. I remember when these games were announced at the Direct, I think it was earlier in the year, I was over the moon. I was like, oh, this is awesome. I love this series. I can't wait to play it on Switch. Not thinking, how exactly are they going to implement the map making, which is a huge part. So I think if you're on the fence, if you're not sure, I think these games are still good, good to very good. But this is not the best way to play them. The visuals are not enough. I do like how, and I think this is an addition to all three of the games, is that you can change the difficulty at any time. So it might have been that the original games, once you set the difficulty at the beginning of the game, you had to stick with that. Okay. But this one, there are three options, basically easy, medium, and hard. Medium is a good challenge. It's still quite tough. Hard, I imagine, is very, very difficult. I actually haven't tried playing on that mode before. The easiest setting is called Picnic, and it's really easy. It's really easy. Picnic is a great name for it because it feels like you're out for a Sunday stroll, and you've run into some tigers, some lions, some bears, and you know they're going down instantly. Like you turn on the auto battle feature, and within seconds you've won, and you are in no danger whatsoever. So there's a gap between the normal difficulty and the easiest setting that's maybe a little bit too far apart for my preference. But the flip side of that is, A, it makes the game really approachable for newcomers. If you've never played a game like this before, where you could get into the Picnic setting, get a sense of it, and then maybe switch to normal once you kind of figured out the mechanics and stuff. But the Picnic thing is also great for grinding. Like if you might want to do a lot of grinding in this game because A, you need the experience points to gain new skills and level ups. But the way that you earn gold and actually increase the stock of items to purchase is by taking back the parts or items dropped by enemies and selling them at the store. So you sell X number of parts or things you find in the dungeon from mining or collecting at these gathering spots. You bring those back to the store, and by selling those components, you unlock new items, new weapons, armor, equipment to put on your characters. So that's kind of an interesting thing that's made easier by that switching of difficulties, which is kind of nice. So you're not constantly needing to go back and heal or go back to the inn or revive dead party members just because you want to grind for an hour or something like that. So that is nice. I will give them that.
Yeah, well, that's definitely the best thing about any of these kind of remasters or ports or whatever, is getting all these quality of life improvements in the specifically for like difficulty and stuff, because there's nothing worse than getting stuck at a certain point and then being like, okay, do I invest X amount of time to grind to the point where I can beat, you know, said challenge, or do I just like call it a day and move on to the next game?
Yeah. One of the other major mechanics of Etrian Odyssey, which sets it apart from some other games, is you have in the dungeons, you have these kind of super bosses or super mini bosses, I guess, that are very, very difficult when you first see them. They're called FOEs. When you see an FOE, generally you want to avoid it until you've maybe gone past it and gone to the next floor and leveled up a little bit more, improved your equipment and stuff like that. But when you come back or you're revisiting a floor, you're making your way back through the dungeon again, you may want to battle one of these FOEs, and they're generally really tough, just really tough boss fights. And you're going to have to use strategies, like you're going to have to bind their head or bind their arms so they can't use particular moves, or you want to use status effects or stat buffs. Like this isn't a game where you can just fight, heal and use offensive magic and win, you really have to make use of buffs and debuffs to get through these FOE battles in particular. And then, you know, the boss fights at the end of each stratum are incredibly tough. Like you really have to be prepared for those, you know, again, through grinding, through having the best equipment or forging your equipment to make it stronger, or to add particular buffs to the equipment too. There's a lot of those kind of little RPG things or RPG mainstays, classic RPG gameplay that's in here. That's very good. You know, the progressing with your characters through skill trees, fighting tough bosses, maybe failing and needed to come back and try a new strategy. All of that is very fun here. I don't want to undersell that. I really like that element of the games, but I did want to return to the job classes of Etrian Odyssey 3, because I think they're kind of fun in particular. 1 and 2, the job classes are a little bit more basic, you know, your fighter, your healer, your black mage, like that kind of stuff. But in Etrian Odyssey 3, you have some other ones you can play around with. So one that I really like is, I think it's called the Sovereign. And the Sovereign is one that this character is going to buff your attack or defense. Or if they stay alive or stay at full health, they can actually restore your whole party's health every turn. So they've got this really cool ability you can unlock. I don't remember the name of it, but basically it means if you add points to this skill and your character, every round of combat, they still have 100% HP, your whole party will get HP back. So you're kind of incentivized to keep them in the back, maybe have their evasion stat a little bit higher, make sure they're not getting hit as often as you can. And then they'll heal the party in turn. They later kind of versions of that ability, you can gain HP when you win a battle. You can gain HP just by taking steps in the dungeon. So I found this Sovereign class very, very helpful. You have a monk who is not only a healer, maybe even a primary healer, but also can fight with clubs, or can fight barehanded if you level up that particular stat for fighting barehanded. So you've got that one. Obviously, you have like the defensive type classes where they're trying to provoke the enemy, so the enemy directs all their attacks there. You do have black mages as well, but you have a class like the farmer, or there, I think one of the games might call them something different, but the farmer is basically someone, they're not meant to fight. They will be in your party during combat, but they're not a fighter or a healer or anything like that. They're strictly meant to make it so that as you traverse the dungeon, you can gain more experience. You can collect more items. You can get more rare items. Maybe you can avoid enemy encounters through some of their abilities. But it's really cool to have a class that is basically terrible when you bring them into a fight, but very helpful when you're just exploring the dungeon. I love that you kind of think about that aspect of the game, that the outside of combat phase is being really, really important. And it is here. The exploration and, you know, just collecting and selling materials and getting the best equipment, finding the rare materials, like all of that stuff's very, very important here. So I suppose you could call that part of the grind. I think it's fun. I like seeing how the fruits of your labor, you know, that you do get stronger, you do get more capable, and then you can take on more and more of those FOE enemies that you find. Having a farmer class, and you can just put them in your stable, that you don't have to bring them with you at all times. You can say, okay, I'm going to go fight the boss now. I'll take out my fighters, my stronger warriors, and then I'll leave my farmer back at the guild or back at the back in town. And then when you go and you're just doing exploring, you're not doing a lot of heavy combat, you bring the farmer back out and you can kind of grind for materials that way. So some really cool job classes in this game. I think that's another thing that makes it a more standout RPG. It's not just your typical JRPG archetypes, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd say my biggest takeaway from this episode has been that Nintendo needs to develop a second screen accessory that snaps onto the Switch and connects via the USB-C port on the bottom, because it's like perfectly placed where you like kind of just shove it into the port and it'll hang right there. You get your second screen, and then developers can have an easier time porting old DS and 3DS games, because you'll have two screens.
You know what that reminds me of? It reminds me of the Circle Pad Pro for 3DS. Oh, yeah. that Frankenstein attachment, basically, yeah, that added the extra stick or whatever, so you could play a game like Kid Icarus Uprising. You remember that one? I never owned one, but I remember seeing them and thinking, like, what is this? Like, it's just a ridiculous peripheral. You know, it reminds me of those old Game Boy peripherals that were just, you know.
Yeah, the magnifying glass with the built-in light.
The light, yeah, the battery pack, all those things that just make it super, super bulky and add like 10 times the weight to it or something like that.
It'll probably, you put the dual screen on the Switch and it'll probably bring the battery down to last about 30 minutes.
That's right, exactly. And well, maybe Switch 2 will be two. It'll be Switch 2 because it'll go back to being two screens or something like that.
I'd love to see the internet if Switch 2 ends up having two screens.
When Switch 2 gets announced, inevitably, it'll be great to see the all the mock-ups and stuff. Because the mock-ups for the original Switch were great. Like, you still chuckle when I see some of those ones.
That oval.
One's the best.
The oval one.
With the buttons inside the screen. Oh, God, just classic, man. Like, how could anyone think that Nintendo's going to put out something like this? I get the Wii U was a flop, and they did Virtual Boy, but oh, my gosh. Yeah. Yeah. I just want to leave people with the idea that, you know, these are still very, very good games. And, you know, even if their translation to Switch is not perfect, I think you can find a way to enjoy them, whether that's using a stylus, using your finger on a touch screen, God forbid, you know, bring the lens cleaner. Or maybe the button controls just click for you. I think that's going to happen for some of the people that pick up this game. They will gel with this new control scheme, and we'll see if that's good enough and the reception's good enough for these games to warrant more Etrian Odyssey games. I don't want the series to end here by any means. I think I do hope they will find maybe some more elegant solutions. And maybe that is on the next Switch console that has some ability to do something. I have no idea. But I hope that the series will continue and they'll find a way to maybe make the map making more of it automated or something like that. Or, I don't know. I I'm not a game developer, but I am curious to see what comes out of this collection, and then what the future holds for more Etrian Odyssey games. It's definitely my favorite type of dungeon crawler. And I think somewhere either this year or next, we need to play another similar dungeon crawler with Persona Q 2 on 3DS. David, did you end up picking that up before the eShop closed?
I feel like I think I bought it and then just never downloaded it.
Yeah. But yeah. I might have been the exact same, because it was like under $10 at some point, I think. So
yeah,
pretty hard to pass up at that point.
Yeah. It's funny because then I'm thinking, like, was it Q1 or Q2? I can't even remember which one.
Yeah,
but I'm pretty sure I got one.
I grabbed both, and we can just play whatever one, whatever you have, or play the opposite one. Doesn't even matter. But I always have an itch to play more of these games. Like, when I play an Etrian Odyssey game, I'm like, oh, I want to play another one like this. Maybe not necessarily an Etrian Odyssey game, but the Persona Q series I like to go back to for sure. I reviewed the third game here of this collection, and I started up the first and second just to get a little bit of footage or capture some of the footage for music for the reviews. And I'm like, oh, I had already rolled credits on the third game, and I was really tempted to just start a new game of the first or second one. But you know, Tears of the Kingdom is calling my name, so I can't do another Switch game until
Diablo 4 is only days away from the recording too. So.
Isn't that ridiculous? Yeah. We're all going to be knee deep in hell. Casey and I in particular, but yeah, lots of good games coming out in June, FF16, Diablo 4. And then, you know, we're also really close to whatever Summer Game Fest or whatever the game makers are obviously going to have.
The E3 equivalent or
E3,
whatever.
Whatever E3 is this month or next month, that's weeks away at this point. So I think we're going to start getting announcements for the second half of the year. So I'm really excited to see what else is coming down the pipe here.
Yeah, I'm excited to see it. I don't think my wallet is.
No, oh gosh, no. Yeah, so you've still got renovations to handle. At the very least, my renovations are in the rearview mirror, and I can start to maybe start saving up some money for games again. But I think that'll do us for this episode as well. So just a little look at the Etrian Odyssey Origins Collection coming to Switch. It comes to Switch on June 1st. So if you're listening to this, it's already out. You can pick up the whole set of games for a little bit of a discount. I think it's almost like getting one of the games for free. It is still a steeper cost for these games, the collection and the individual titles, a little bit more expensive than we'd like to see. So something to consider for sure. I don't know if there'll be a demo coming out for these games at some point. I hope so. But if not, you know, definitely check out our reviews on NWR. We've got YouTube versions as well for Donald's version of Donald's review of Etrian Odyssey 1, Neil's version, Neil's review of 2, and then mine of 3. Those will all be available for your reading or viewing pleasure. Thanks again, everybody, for joining us. We are on Spotify. Check us out there or on your podcast app of choice. Leave us a review. Leave us 5 stars. That's awesome. Helps with visibility. Of course, questions or suggestions, go to david@thethirstymage.com. We'd love to hear from you as we kind of plan out the second half of the year. I can't believe we're already, you know, basically we're June here, right? We're already into June. So we're at the last month of the first half of the year, and we'll see what the future holds for the Thirsty Mage and for I guess the gaming public in general. Mm-hmm. Yeah, everyone have a great night, great week, and bye for now.
Bye.